This is the sworn statement of Sam Farley. Today's date is November the 9th, 2008. The time is approximately 8 minutes after 6 in the evening, and the statement is being taken over the phone. Mr. Farley, would you acknowledge for the record that you're aware that I'm tape recording this statement?
Yes, I'm aware you're recording.
And you know it's a sworn statement, and that when we get to the end of it, you will be asked to swear or affirm that the statements you've made are true and correct, the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes.
I've introduced myself to Mr. Farley as Bill Branscombe, a private investigator employed by the law firm of Robert G. Bernhoft out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the firm having an interest in an individual he knows as Troy David Stratus. Mr. Farley, when and where and under what circumstances did you first meet Troy Stratus?
I met Troy the day before Thanksgiving of 2006. I believe that was November 22nd, 2006. I was introduced to him from my mother, who had recently been employed by Troy to do his bookkeeping, and met him on a casual lunch just to meet the guy my mom was working for.
And your mother would be Sherry Farley?
Yes, Sherry Farley.
What happened?
Troy, up to that point, my mom was not allowed to tell us who she was working for. Everything was very secretive. So the opportunity to meet Troy was very intriguing because this is a guy we weren't allowed to know anything about. And through lunch, Troy opened up pretty much right away to tell us who he was, explained that he had a very hard childhood growing up, that his mother got pregnant with twins, had an abortion, and one of the twins was terminated, but that he had survived it. And from that, his mother never really wanted him, tried to put him up for adoption, but his grandparents went and picked him up, and he was raised by his grandparents. So through his life, had a tough childhood, eventually reconnected with his biological father, who was married to jazz singer Nancy Wilson, and that introduced him to the entertainment world, that he had worked for Berry Gordy as an assistant and had opportunities to meet many people in the Motown industry back at that time. Early on, he had an opportunity to invest his money in a company that would later become AOL, and had made an original investment into a very small fortune, and then took that money and invested it overseas in oil in Chevron and Texaco, and that he would soon be named by, I believe, Forbes magazine is the one he referred to as one of America's newest billionaires. So he was introducing himself as a very wealthy man, and that he was going to be working on a new movie production. He didn't go into details, but that he was a movie producer, and that his hope was to make this movie over in the Egypt area. So originally he just introduced himself, told us everything I guess we would want to know about him. Very engaging, very charismatic. After lunch, invited us back to the house that he was staying at, which we later found out was Nicole Murphy and Eddie Murphy's house that Nicole Murphy got in their divorce settlement. And he did say that this was his house, that he had bought it from Nicole. And so we went up, did the grand tour of the house, spent the day with Troy, and the next day was Thanksgiving. We, of course, did Thanksgiving with our family, but the day after Thanksgiving, we invited him to come cut down Christmas trees, which was a family tradition of ours. So we immediately kind of adopted him into our family. He was a single person, kind of seemed very lonely, didn't talk a lot about his good relationships with his family. He was very intrigued by how close our family was. So that day after Thanksgiving, we took him out, and ended up spending almost the whole weekend with him. a lot of what he talked about was very, you know, big picture things, the movies he wanted to make, the homes that he has. He mentioned, you know, having homes in Canada and Florida and Vegas and wanting to bring all of our family with him on these trips and adventures, offering to fly all of our family to Disney World for Christmas, and just making it sound like he was a very well-off person who was going to, wanted to do nothing but give because he didn't have a family really to give to. During that week, he and I discussed a lot about my career and what I was doing. I was currently employed by a staffing company as a branch manager. My profession was hiring people, finding people for companies as a recruiter, a headhunter. And he explained that he needed someone to help him grow his company. He was just starting a company and wanted to hire me to head up his staffing in HR. And by the end of the weekend, had made me an offer to come on as his director of HR and staffing, and that, you know, this would be a very lucrative opportunity, that initially, you know, there would be a good opportunity, but that that opportunity would grow to an amazing spot where, you know, I'd be involved in the film and music industry and be employing people for all of his various companies. So after that weekend, you know, knowing that my mom had already accepted a job with him, looking at the opportunity, it seemed like something too good to be true and something I didn't want to look back and regret not taking. So I, in turn, gave notice to my current employer and ended up working for Troy starting in December of 06.
Okay. Did you know anything at that time about where he had come from?
Not anything concrete other than what he had told us. You know, he had grown up in Sacramento, but, you know, had been all over the world. The only understanding I really had of his money at that time was that it was from investments in AOL and later in Chevron Texaco. So these investments he made long ago had significant payoffs to him later in life. So that was what I understood was where his fortune was from.
Did he tell you that he had any particular contacts in the Middle East?
There were times that he did talk about his partners, that there were overseas investors in the film he was going to be making, and that these were the same partners who, after he had gotten his fortune from his AOL investment, that he had invested with these overseas Middle East individuals in oil, and that these partnerships are where, you know, his current fortune was. He mentioned that he was going to be leaving for Dubai for some press conferences that where they were going to be announcing the movie. And this was, you know, from the first day I met him, he was talking about leaving for Dubai. And during, you know, every week since then, he talked about leaving for Dubai the previous week and pushing these meetings back. But yes, he constantly referred to his Middle East partners, but never referred to anyone specifically by name other than a prince, which I'd have to go back and look at my notes to get the name of that. It was a very long Middle Eastern name. I can't remember it off the top of my head.
Okay. So he did tell you that he had connections with at least one royal family?
Yes, he did refer. In fact, later he had shared a story that the relationship with the royal family started from his college days at USC, that he met some of the royal family who was attending school at USC, and that he befriended them and tutored and helped them through college, and that that's where the relationship originated from, but that his contacts were of the royal family in Dubai.
Okay. So you did go to work for him.
Yes.
Now, you say he said he had a lot of money. Did mm-hmm. you see evidence? You said that the house, you know, he bought the house from Nicole Murphy. What other signs did you see that would suggest that he had money?
Well, when we went on the original tour of the house, I, you know, later told people I felt like I was going on the show MTV Cribs, because as we walked around the house, you saw, you know, very nice furniture, you know, nice art. We went into the garage. There was a Phantom Rolls Royce in there, a Lamborghini, an Aston Martin, you know, very top-of-the-line cars. He was driving an M5 BMW. You know, there was a video arcade at the house. I mean, just things the average person, even the well-off person, doesn't have. But it was seeing all of those things, his clothing, his jewelry, watches, sunglasses, you know, very top-of-the-line name brand items that obviously people with those things would have money behind them. So that was kind of the evidence that I saw, other than, you know, talking with my mother and her going, yeah, there's money, but... You know, she had only seen a limited amount at that time in the account she was dealing with.
Okay. So you went to work for him, and your job was to hire people, correct?
Yes.
Did you hire people?
I did. He needed some initial help just in terms of assistants or gophers. I had referred, the first person I referred was Jake Bartlett, who came on just as an assistant helping organize things. There were many files that had been shipped to the house that needed to be organized, and Jake initially started to help with that organization. Later, I hired Matt Antrobus, Chris Budenbender. I was asked, even though he was already working, Lorenzo Pryor, who was a music producer, I was asked to help negotiate contracts with him. Kevin Dillon, who is another music producer, was someone who Troy had already hired, but I was asked to move forward in the contract negotiations with him. There were certain people who Troy had already had around him, but I had been asked to put formalities, policies, procedures in place, employment contracts and such, to move forward in setting up this formal organization. So there were current people I was bringing under the fold, and then new people I was adding into that. And then I was asked to hire a personal assistant for Troy, a butler for Troy, possible security for Troy, and those were some of the priorities that he wanted, namely the personal assistant. So once I hired some of the administrative people to help, I had also hired an accounting assistant through a temp agency, and then I hired another admin assistant receptionist through another temp agency. That was Tara Graham. And then Susan, I can't remember Susan's last name, but Susan was the accounting assistant, and Tara was the admin assistant. And once I got them in place, I started my search for the personnel help in January. And through the Elizabeth Rose Agency in Southern California, and with the assistance of Jack Lippman, who is the owner of the Elizabeth Rose Agency, I interviewed and identified four individuals for Troy to interview for personal assistance, butler, and security. And with Troy's instruction, we hired all four individuals, made them offers of employment to work for Troy, and all four individuals quit their current jobs but never actually worked for Troy.
And how is it that they quit their jobs but never actually went to work for Troy?
Troy had instructed me that he wanted to hire all four individuals, I had told them their salary expectations. He had agreed to that, and he had moved out to Florida, and he and I were conversing over the phone, and he had said he wanted all four people to start March 1st. So through myself and Jack Lippman, we made the offer of employment to these individuals. Troy made plans that as of March 1st, they would be on his staff, and wanted to make plans to move them all out to Florida, where he was at that time residing.
Okay. You know who he was living with in Florida at that time?
At that time, he was living in a house that he said was his. It was in Wilton Manor in Florida. It was a house he owned. He didn't have any roommates or anyone that lived with him, but there was the usual entourage of people that seemed to be around him. I know Adam Roberts lived out in Florida, Kevin Dillon lived out in Florida, and then there were a few other people who he was also working with, but no one else lived in the house with him at that time.
Now, do you know the name Richard Hack?
Yes, very familiar with the name Richard Hack.
What role did he play in this, insofar as you knew?
As far as I know, Richard was a friend of Troy's. Richard is a known author and writer, and Troy had introduced Richard to me as the head writer for the production company we were starting. So Richard was going to be an employee, although he and I had not discussed any specifics of employment in terms of compensation or start dates or anything to that effect. We hadn't gotten to that point, but it was always the intentions that he would be an employee. Richard moved to an apartment building in Florida at that time, and I was asked to write a letter of recommendation as the employer for Richard, which I did, for the housing agency he was working with, and he moved into that apartment, which I later, and when I visited Florida, I visited his apartment there. Richard was very involved in Troy's life. It seemed that Troy and Richard spoke very often, especially when anything of significance or important subjects came. Troy had Richard assisting him, whether it was anything from making travel arrangements to dealing with calling people about certain subjects. Richard, in some ways, it seemed like Richard was an assistant to Troy, because it seemed like Troy was having him do a lot of things. But through the time I was there and to today, Richard is always been a big part of Troy's life, but no one is really clear as to what his role in Troy's life is. But I, even recently I've had communication with Richard speaking on behalf of Troy. So I know that Richard is very involved, but his specific role, as far as I was told, was to be a head writer in Troy's production company.
But now, you say he went to Florida, you hired all these people, and then but they never actually went to work. Why was that?
Troy always told me he wasn't ready. He hired these people, and the plan was to have him start March 1st. As the date of March 1st was getting closer, I was getting concerned because I was trying to make plans for these people to come out to work for Troy, and he was, never very committed to, well, don't worry, we're going to work things out. I was in Florida the last 2 weeks of February, where I was interviewing and hiring some web developers And once I had gotten the web developers hired, and they started working for Troy, and then eventually they set up the website that Troy has now, which is troydstratos.com, I looked Troy in the eye and I said, "You have four people coming to work for you next week." And he looked at me like he had no idea what I was talking about. He said, what do you mean? I said, "You have four people who you've hired ready to start working March 1st. He goes, "I haven't hired anybody." I said, "Yes, you did, Troy. You told me you wanted to hire these people and to move forward and to have them start March 1st. He goes, "Well, I can change my mind." I said, "Well, no, you can't, because they've quit their jobs to come work for you." He goes, "Well, that was their choice." I said, "No, that it was their choice, but it was because you offered them a job." And he made it seem like he had no idea what he had committed to, that he had no plans, but upon seeing how upset I was that this was happening, he said, "Don't worry, we'll work things out." Initially, the plan was going to be that he would pay them their salary, and they would just need to be ready to come to Florida when he needed them. So we were still going to move forward in hiring them. They just didn't need to come at this time, but that he would start paying them as of March 1st.
Did that happen?
No. Around the end of February is when I received my last pay, actually where the majority of the staff at the time received their last pay, and never really saw any money other than little bits after that point. The employees never received a dime from Troy. They were told to wait, to hang in there, that Troy was going to come through. But around that time is when my life with Troy started spiraling down. All of the money disappeared. My paycheck and reimbursement check and travel expenses were not being paid or reimbursed. There was no money in the account for Sherry to pay bills. And all of a sudden, Troy started disappearing. We stopped hearing from Troy. We stopped getting feedback. But when we did hear from him, it was almost like nothing wrong was going on. He still wanted us to do jobs, still wanted us to communicate with people. And when we asked him about money, he said, "Don't worry, I'm working on things." He talked about he had to wire money from overseas from his account in Switzerland. And we had hope, because we had seen money around Troy, that, "Oh, don't worry, you know, there's this little glitch, it'll get worked out." And we never received that pay. And none of the people who were hired at that time, including the web developers who we hired, ever received any compensation or pay from Troy.
What kind of excuses did he give you for that? I mean, he told you he was a billionaire.
Oh, yeah. And that's where we all started scratching our heads. A lot of the excuses were blaming the banks, that these wire transfers of large sums of money took time, that he was being investigated by the FBI, and he put a lot of blame on them, that they might be freezing his accounts so he couldn't transfer the money. He was saying, you know, blaming Eddie Murphy at the time, because he felt that Eddie Murphy was spying on him, and that Eddie Murphy, with his influences, could be preventing things from happening. He made a lot of excuses, and at the time, he was working on refinancing one of Nicole and his properties, which I believe was the Los Lagos Granite Bay home. And in fact, one night I had to fly down to LA to pick up loan documents to get the loan papers in so they could get this refinance in. And we thought, okay, well, this will be money to get people paid. And that money came in and went out as the very next day, and we never saw a penny of that money. from this refinance. So there was just excuse after excuse after excuse, and it eventually got to, I'm working, I'm doing the best I can, be patient with me. Have faith, you know, you'll be paid what I owe you plus more. You know, there was just a lot of faith he was asking from us. And from what we had seen and the vision that he had painted, we were willing to give him that faith, knowing that he would, or trusting that he would come through. And that was almost 2 years ago. It was 2 years ago I met him. About a year and a half ago, that, you know, that payment stopped and we're still waiting for our money.
Now, in addition to salary, does mm-hmm. he owe you the salary that was not paid? Does he owe you any other money?
Yes. On top of my salary, there were expenses that I incurred, mainly a lot of travel expenses. I had purchased and made travel plans for him and other people around him and in the company. A big expense was when Troy and I flew down to L.A. to interview these four staff that we were hiring for the personal assistant, butler, and security. Troy wanted to stay at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel in the presidential suite. Troy and I and Alexi, his personal trainer, flew down to L.A. We're picked up at the airport by a limo, and then we're taken to a bank in L.A. for him to pick up some money, and then taken to the Beverly Wilshire Hotel. When we checked into the hotel, Troy gave them his credit card, and the credit card was denied. Troy was very embarrassed and about to get very upset, and he, you know, looked at me and said, "Do you have a credit card?" I said, "Well, yeah." So I threw down my credit card, and he said, "Okay, well, I'll get this worked out, and then I'll transfer everything over to my credit card once I get it worked out." I said, "Okay, no problem." The next day, we checked out, and Troy had left. He had to fly to Houston for something, which I had purchased his travel tickets for that. After flying out, I went down to the hotel desk and understood that, you know, the credit card was never transferred. Everything was still in my name. And I believe with his hotel, which was the presidential suite, which was about $5,000 a night, between the hotel, the dinner, his massage, the room my mom and I had, and various other expenses, the total bill was over $9,000 for a one-night stay at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel. So that was a large expense that I incurred, but the majority of what he owes me, I guess it's probably about 50% pay and compensation and 50% reimbursement, but all of those are work-related reimbursements in terms of travel expenses and expenses for running the business.
Where did Alexi stay?
Alexi had an apartment in Florida that he stayed at, although he seemed to always be around Troy. So when Alexi was in Sacramento, he would stay at the house in Granite Bay in one of the guest rooms. When he traveled with Troy, he either always had his own room, or, you know, when we were at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel in the presidential suite, Alexi stayed in one of the guest bedrooms in the presidential suite at the Beverly Wilshire. So Alexi was always around Troy. Troy was very into fitness and working out, trying to make sure he got his workout in every day. So Alexi needed to be there almost every day with him. So Alexi was always with Troy and would just stay, you know, wherever he was told to stay.
Now, while, for what period of time then, it sounds like we're talking just a very few months, the first few months of 2007, that the entity that you were involved with there in Sacramento was actually alive and functioning?
Yeah, the work that initially Troy had set up to do in Sacramento Was only there in December and January, and then in February he wanted to move operations to Florida. The plan was going to be that he would also relocate all of us to Florida as well, which we were willing to do. We had chosen this as our career, and that's where our career was going. So he was going to relocate us to Florida, and we were moving operations out there at that time.
Did, during that period of time, that things were actually still in operation there, the few months, the entity itself would have been Next Level Media?
Yes, that's what, that's the company he referred to as.
Okay. Did Next Level Media, what did Next Level Media do during those few months?
On the production side, Troy was working with Nicole Murphy and was trying to help Nicole start her music career. So that was one of the things he was working on. He would be back and forth from L.A. In recording sessions. He was working a lot with Kevin Dillon, who was one of our music producers, in putting that track together. He was also working a lot with Lorenzo Pryor. And then they were also trying to collect other resources for future projects. Another project Next Level Media was working on was Collection X, which was a jewelry line that Troy was going to be creating that was based on jewelry pieces from celebrity ex-wives. Nicole, again, was the focus of this, where he was going to feature her jewelry and then getting other famous exes' jewelries and then making all that Collection X. We had talked about, of course, the movie 18D that he was going to be creating. That we didn't really see that much work around that other than, you know, we would have staff meetings where he would talk about some of the storylines or some of the functionality that would go with the movie. But the majority of the work that Next Level Media was doing at that time was around Nicole Murphy and her album that Troy was working on. And then the bulk of the staff in Sacramento was working on getting Troy organized, trying to get the company to a point where we could move forward. There were hundreds or thousands of documents, files from Troy's past, lots of financial information that he was trying to organize. So initially, the main focus for all the staff in Sacramento was to get everything filed, everything chronologically in order, all of his financial records put together so that he could be in the right place to launch this company. Without this organization, he didn't feel he was ready to really publicly launch the company. So besides the Collection X and the Nicole Murphy album, the bulk of the staff in Sacramento was working on organizing Troy Stratus's past and current life.
Now, at the time, where did you think the money was coming from?
At the time, I thought the money was coming from his fortune that he made on investing. He didn't seem to have any revenue generating, or he didn't have any revenue generating entities or resources out there that I knew of. There was nothing he was doing that was making money. So I was told that, you know, he had told me that this was just his money. You know, he had made millions and millions and even billions on these investments. I think he had one time told me it was $1.4 billion was his worth. So I always believed that that's where the money came from. He just had money in accounts from his investments.
And during this period of time, the spending was pretty
spending was limitless. I mean, we would go out to lunch, whether it was at a simple deli or a very nice restaurant. He always tipped the staff very well. You know, a $30 meal got a $100 tip to the waitress. You know, he would fly. This was around the holidays as well. So he was doing, we would go to Costco and leave with 14 carts filled with things, gifts to give to people. He went to Toys R Us and bought hundreds of presents for kids. He flew down to Vegas and flew back on a private chartered jet. And when he came back, he had, you know, hundreds of gifts from FAO Schwartz and shopping he had done in Vegas. So we just saw so much shopping done, and very elaborate gifts, very expensive gifts that he was doing. He was planning a huge holiday celebration for family and friends, and he wanted to give so much to everyone. And, you know, you would go on these spending trips with him, and it was just, it seemed, you know, limitless. He never looked at a price. He never asked about a price. He just would look at something and say, that, I want that. And, you know, the spending was endless. He never seemed to have any issue with price. He was never concerned. Even when I would show concern about, you know, well, this is a little expensive, he would look at me like I was silly and say, oh, Sam, you have so much to learn, you know, and just because I've never experienced this. And I would always tell him that, you know, Troy, you know, we were at Costco and people are gawking at us like, who is this guy? And I had never experienced anything like this. And he would laugh about it because, you know, he thought it was funny that I was so, you know, so stargazed at someone spending like this. But yeah, I never saw any concern for money. I never heard any problems. The only time I heard problems is when someone would ask him for money. I saw a time that his landscaper came up and, you know, said, hey, Troy, I need to get paid. And Troy got very upset with him that he would ask him for money, because Troy makes sure, you know, that to always take care of people, and you should never ask for money because it'll always be given when it's the right time. And so he never liked people directly asking him for money, but it seemed like if you were around, money came your way. And so he would take care of people. From the payroll side, Sherry was, you know, doing the best she could. As long as the money was there, Sherry was paying the paychecks. So that's where, you know, everyone would get the money from Troy from, was through Sherry. But when it came to spending, it was just limitless.
From what you know now, do you know where that money came from?
From what I know now, that money that he was spending was Nicole Murphy's divorce settlement money that Nicole had turned her money over to Troy, thinking that Troy was going to be investing it for her and making it, you know, a small fortune into a large fortune. And, you know, I had heard that this is what he was doing, that he was helping Nicole get away from, you know, being the wife of Eddie Murphy and trying to become, you know, someone for herself. But I've later learned that all the money that was being spent at the time that he had taken from Nicole, he was spending on himself and others. And it seemed like when he stopped paying us, it seems like all the money that Nicole had given him had run out. And it doesn't appear that he has that money, or the majority of it's gone. I don't know if he stashed any of it away somewhere, but it seemed like he had gone through all of her money pretty quickly, which I believe was about $14 million.
Now, did there come a time when the FBI showed up?
Yes, there was a time in January. Actually, on that day, I carpooled with my mom because I had to drop my car off to get fixed. So my mom and I carpooled in together, and as we pulled up to the gate of the estate, there was a car parked at the gate. So we pulled up behind it, and both of us looked at each other going, you know, who's this? We don't know who they are. And two individuals got out, a man and a woman got out, and the gentleman came to my mom's door. She was driving, and asked, "Are you Sherry Farley?" She said, "I am," and he pulled out his FBI badge and identification and asked to speak with us. So we let them in the gate. She immediately called one of the attorneys we were working with, who counseled us to go ahead and talk to the FBI and, you know, answer their questions and anything we didn't feel comfortable talking about, you know, that we didn't have to, but encouraged us to talk with them. So we invited them into the guest house where we housed our business operations out of, and brought them into the kitchen, and they proceeded to ask us a lot of questions about Troy, how we knew Troy, what Troy's business was, and then a lot of questions about Troy's money and where that money was coming from and what that money was being spent on. They asked us you know, questions about Nicole Murphy and what we knew about her. So it seemed that, you know, that was kind of one of the eye-opening opportunities that I started realizing that, you know, money that he was spending may have more ties to Nicole than I had originally thought. And a lot of their questions were trying to learn as much as they could about Troy and who he was, and how much he claimed he was true. From our perspective and what we knew. At the end of the conversation, they served my mom with a subpoena for all of the records on the premises, a copy of all the records on the premises, and they needed to be delivered within a week period of time. You know, they had said that, you know, they wanted to work with us, they wanted to be cooperative, because they could have come in and just taken everything right then, but that they were fine with us getting copies of everything and giving it to them a week later. And they left.
Do you have any idea what the sheer volume of documents was that you had on hand at that time?
We had four or five file cabinets filled of documents. And these were, you know, industrial-sized file cabinets, not your, you know, your Home Depot-bought little file cabinets. These were, I don't even know how to describe the size of them, but, you know, 6 feet by, you know, by 6 feet file cabinets that were about 2 feet deep. And these were filled with files of all of Troy's financial transactions, emails, employee information, just tons and tons and tons of records. I would say, you know, if I had to put a number to how many pages of documents, you know, well over, you know, 20,000 to 30,000 pages of documents.
Now, of those documents, do you know, do you yourself know, how many of those documents were ultimately turned over to the FBI?
One box of documents was originally turned over to the legal firm that was representing Troy. We didn't deliver it to the FBI. The legal firm was going to do that. And then I know that after that one box, and when I say a box, this is your average file box, a box that you would buy at, you know, Office Max or such, that the attorney contacted Troy because it seemed pretty obvious that there wasn't, that all the records had not been turned over. And so Troy had turned over more later, but I don't remember how many, but I think it might have been another box or two that was turned over. So eventually, I guess it was three boxes altogether that were turned over.
and you have an idea of what percentage three boxes would represent of what there originally were?
It was probably about 30%.
Okay.
20 to 30% of what was originally in the house.
Do you know who made the decisions as far as what of the original documents would actually be turned over?
Troy. Yeah, Troy was very involved at that time with what specifically needed to be turned over in the subpoena. Troy interpreted the subpoena to mean any documents pertaining to him and proceeded to discard anything that had to do with anyone else. You know, and I think he even got it down to anything that pertained to him in Sacramento or in that house. So he started taking things out that had to do with Canada or had to do with Florida or had to do with other people like Nicole. So he, you know, he had people go page by page of these documents and, you know, read to him what was on that page, and if it had anything to do with anyone other than himself in Sacramento, he was taking it out.
Okay. What do you think Troy does for a living?
I think Troy takes money from people. I think he's a great salesperson. He's very charismatic. He's very good with words. I think he is good at painting a picture of who he is, who he wants to be, and gets people to believe he is. And he gets people to believe that he can do something with their money, that he can make amazing things, that he is a good investment, and he gets people to give him money. In short, I think he is a professional con man.
Did you ever, in the time that you knew him, see him actually do anything or produce anything or whatever that was actually a moneymaker?
No. No. I mean, I saw him working on things that cost money, you know, when he was working on doing a music video for Nicole, meeting with different people to do that for Nicole, but that wasn't generating money for him. That was costing money to produce. But now I never saw him make a single dollar.
Well, I guess one could argue that it was making money for him if the objective was to induce Nicole to believe that he was actually doing the things he was promising to do.
It could, and that would be the long term, that he was doing things to make money, the same of I'm going to make a movie that is going to generate revenue. But the time that I knew him and to today, to this point, none of those activities have generated any revenue. So in the time that I've known him, he never generated any form of revenue, to my knowledge.
Okay. I don't remember if I asked you. What's the total dollar figure that he owes you at this point?
Right now, with interest running on the debt I've accrued from my credit cards, the total is a little over $52,000.
Okay. Do you have firsthand knowledge that he has also taken advantage of other people?
Oh, yeah. My mother, Sherry Farley, is one. I know he owes her close to $100,000. Earlier this year, I believe it was March, after months of trying to connect with Troy, sending him emails, making phone calls, nothing being returned, about at that point where I pretty much gave up any hope that I would ever see that money. And out of frustration, I put up a website with my brother's help called TroyIsFake.com. And the purpose of this website was to share my story with other people and to allow other people to share their story as well. Initially, I contacted, of course, the people I knew who had worked with Troy. And the website grew very fast. A lot of people seemed to be looking for information about Troy. And I started hearing from people from Troy's past who had come across Troy and who, you know, Troy owed money to. And I heard from people in Boston, in Canada, in Vegas, in Florida. Just it seemed all the places Troy had been, there was at least one person from each area who had contacted me with their stories. Later in that year, around June, I had shown the website to a friend of mine who was an attorney, who had advised me that, you know, there was a lot of emotion in my website. And I should probably take some of the emotion out and put more of the fact-based information out there, which I agreed. I put the website up out of emotion. I was very upset. And right about that time, I also was finally contacted by Troy. And Troy had called me significantly, or surprisingly, he called me from Dubai, which is a place he always talked about going to and never did. But he had, from the number he called me at, which was on my caller ID, I put that into Google and found out he was staying at the Fairmont Hotel in Dubai. And he had contacted me initially by email, because I didn't answer my phone because I didn't recognize the number. And I believe I still have that email, but he was just shocked that I would ever put up a website like this, that I wouldn't come to him as a man, that I wouldn't try and settle this, that I would publicly attack him, that all of the things on my website were lies, that there were other people on there that he didn't even know, and how could they be telling these stories, and in a nutshell, after a long, long email, the summary of it was, how could you do this to me? And later I did talk to him on the phone. He explained that he was in Dubai in his business meetings trying to get money to pay me what he owed me and others, and that they had printed off all the pages of the website and had questioned him about it. And he had claimed at that point he had no knowledge of the site. He encouraged or strongly pleaded with me to take down the site so that he could move forward in his business dealings, and he could get the money to pay us back so he could work everything out. At the time, I had already planned on taking down the site and opening it up under a different name, like I had said, taking some of the emotion out of it. And so I agreed to take it down for a 30-day period so that he could get his business dealt with. And I took down the original site, and during that 30 days, had worked with my mom on redesigning the site. We were going to rename the site imettroy.com and put up a very non-biased, fact-based website in terms of, here's my experience. We would love to hear good and bad experiences from others. After the 30-day, Troy had contacted me that he was still working on things, would need until the end of, or till the beginning of August to get things dealt with. I wasn't ready to put the site back up, so I said, okay, no problem. My mom decided that she thought it was good enough, and she relaunched the site as imettroy.com. At the time, I didn't repost my story, and later, I decided I wanted to remain a little neutral because Troy was communicating with me more, and I wanted to try and be, I don't know if it's a mole, but I wanted to be on Troy's good side so that he would communicate with me so I could at least find out what he's doing. And, of course, I was talking with my mom daily on any interactions I had with Troy. And it seemed to be a good thing because I got a little bit more information on his dealings, what he was doing, what he was planning on, and eventually was later connected with with you, Bill, as your investigation started on Troy.
Mm-hmm. Now, during the time that you had both websites up, you know, one or the other, how many people, just generally, would you say contacted you to tell you that they had been defrauded by Troy or that he had attempted to defraud them?
I had about 20 people contact me who had an experience with Troy. Out of those 20, only about 5 or 6 wanted to publish a story about Troy. The other ones wanted to show their support to me for the site and how they wished they had done that, but they chose at that time not to post anything. In fact, I strongly encouraged them, and in some cases, I took the email that they sent me and posted that as their story, and they would later ask me to take that down, that it wasn't their intention to post a story. But it was probably about 20 people altogether who had contacted me.
Now, did anybody contact you to tell you that they had had a successful business relationship with Troy?
No. No. The only people that contacted me, only one person contacted me to defend Troy, and that was Miguel, who's a friend of Troy's in Florida, who I had met in December of 06. And Miguel had contacted me to defend Troy. He couldn't believe, after all that Troy had done for me and my family, that I would ever put up a site like this. But other than Miguel, I never had any stories or fairy tale endings from anyone. In fact, it was the complete opposite. Every story I had was almost a replica of my story. He was telling people the same things, talking about overseas investors, talked about going to Dubai, talked about these movies that he was going to be creating and these other things he wanted to do. So all the stories were scary how similar they were. But unfortunately for Troy, none of the stories were in his favor.
The timeline strikes me as curious. If I'm understanding you correctly, Troy split for Florida shortly after the FBI showed up.
Yes. Yeah, he wasn't in town at the time, and once the FBI came, and he already had concerns that information was being leaked out. Information about Nicole was being leaked out. He felt that Eddie Murphy, Nicole's ex-husband, was having people spy on him to get information. He had the house. We hired a private investigator to come and do a bug sweep of the house because he thought there might be bugs planted or phone lines were tapped. So he initially was already nervous and planning to possibly move back to Florida. And once the FBI came, I don't think he ever came back to Sacramento at that point. I don't think he's ever returned to Sacramento from the time the FBI showed up.
Is there anything I've not asked you about that you think I should have asked you about, or anything you wanted to talk about that I've not given you an opportunity to talk about?
I can't think of it. Troy, you know, he is a peculiar person, someone like him I've never met before. He's a very health conscious person, very concerned about his health and the health of others around him. And he was almost in some ways overprotective or overcautious with trying to, you know, protect himself, and was very untrusting of others. And he would try and win you over by telling you how much he did trust you and how he couldn't trust others, even his own family. And he seemed to try and learn a lot about you and use that information to either win you or use it against you. In my situation, he constantly referred to my religion. He showed a lot of interest in my religion. He had a lot of questions and wanted to learn as much as he could, and then later would use my religious beliefs against me in terms of how could a Christian man like you do things like this? I know you're a man of God. How could you do this? So he tries to use the knowledge he has on people for his benefit, whether it's for them or against them. And he's very good at what he does. He's very smart. He's obviously done this for a while. And unfortunately, because of the stories and the people I've heard from, he's, you know, even after me, he did it to other people. So, you know, I hope the purpose of the website that went up was never to destroy Troy. It was to share information about Troy. Because I know if that website like that was up there, before I met Troy, I would never be in the situation I am today. And that's the purpose we are trying to share with others and try and get our stories out and so that other people don't go through what we went through with Troy. That's it.
Has anybody offered you anything, promised you anything, threatened you with anything to get you to make this statement?
No.
You know what perjury is?
I do.
You understand then that you have an obligation in making a sworn statement to tell the truth.
I do.
Okay. Well, mindful of your obligation to tell the truth when making a sworn statement, do you swear or affirm that the statement you've made as I've commemorated them on this tape are true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, that will conclude the statement of Sam Farley. The time is approximately 10 minutes after 7 in the evening. Thank you very much.